Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I am your host, Eric Fisher, and this week we are speaking with Justin Wise of Think Digital. Justin and I have a lot of fun talking about knowledge worker productivity. We dip into juicing, where Justin reveals probably one of the most funny pieces of information that I've ever heard on this show. He talks about how his having ADHD actually increased his productivity, how you can recover from a productivity slump, inbox zero, and much, much more. So, let's get started. This week, it is my privilege to talk to Justin Wise. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Eric. It is so good to be here. Glad to be aboard.
Awesome. Now, we're not in a cottage where you're pumping wattage or anything like that, but and I love that because you do it every single time. And I keep thinking, wow, he's just doing that off the top of his head. And then I realize, wait a second,
that's a script. Oh, it's all scripted.
Yeah. But you have an awesome podcast called Think Digital. And do you intend to have the hashtag in front of it on purpose? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those experiments in branding where, you know, when we're talking about new media, it's all kind of blending together. And yes, you need to have different content pieces for different channels, for Twitter, Facebook, podcasting, video, that sort of thing. But I want to see if there's a way to, you know, track the conversation across different social mediums. So that's kind of the purpose behind having the hashtag in there. And of course, it's much easier for me when people are tweeting about it to identify those tweets if they choose to put the hashtag in there.
Well, you've got your hashtag built into the name of your show, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Had I had foresight, I would have done that myself. It would have been a different show. But
yes.
So we've hit on it. You kind of describe it as what? Content marketing practitioner.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, here's the thing, and I go back and forth on this. It feels like daily, but new media, Brian Salas says that new media is evolving faster than experts can be formed. And that's always stuck with me because, number one, I find it to be true. And number two, I just have this funny feeling putting the expert word into anything that I do. So sometimes I feel like that's a title that others should use for you, not one that you should use for yourself. Now, having said that, there is value in subject matter expertise, and there's also value in sharing that you have a certain level of that expertise. So the reason why I put practitioner in there is because, you know, I am practicing this craft just as anybody else would who's listening to this podcast or my podcast or, you know, when I'm at conferences, anyone who is trying to do this stuff, largely speaking, we're all in this together. And so that's why I use that label practitioner.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's touched on by a couple other people that I've interviewed recently in terms of how you are what you do and not being a guru or an expert, although some other people could call you that. I get called those things once in a while, and I'm like, I cringe a little inside when it happens. So you're a knowledge worker in some senses because you deal with content and sitting in front of a computer daily for tons of time. And that's really where I want to go with this and touch on is the fact that you, like me, and most of my listeners are people who, if we're good, we get out of the office and we go do stuff and whatever. But a lot of our work is with screens.
Yeah.
And so how do we fight that? I know that you've had some interesting blog posts in terms of, like, say, talking about taking a walk.
Yeah.
And in terms of sitting, I couldn't find the right thing, so I grabbed a cheap coffee table that's really small, and now I sit that on my desk, and so I can put my laptop up there and stand at my desk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to. I mean, there are studies. You can Google these studies right now. I mean, it wouldn't be hard. Just type in "sitting is killing you" into Google, and you know what we're finding is that as more and more workers kind of transition into this, like you were saying, knowledge worker, and we spend much more time in front of a computer, and because of that, you know, most of us are much more sedentary than, let's say, 100 years ago. You know, we need to find other ways to stay active and to kind of use our bodies throughout the day. And not only that, from a, you know, physiological perspective, but also from a intellectual and, I think, creative perspective. We work better when we kind of get out of the routine or we come up with better ideas. Or, you know, Scott Belsky is a guy who I really enjoy following, and he's big on taking a walk for inspiration. So let's say you're sitting at, this happened to me the other day, actually. I was trying to get the right feel for a blog post, and I just couldn't get it. It just wasn't working. So I went and sat upstairs with my family and then took a walk around the block. And you know, it wasn't like, hey, magical, now I know exactly what to do. But I'll tell you, I came back to that problem much more refreshed and ready to kind of give it a new set of eyes. And I think that that holds true for most people who are in our types of positions where, you know, we're using our brains a lot. And sometimes our brains need a break.
Yeah, and you even were nice enough when you saw that I asked for juicing recipes to tweet me the Crimson Cleanser.
That's right.
And I am going to – I haven't tried it yet but because I forgot that you'd send it to me. But I have it saved in Evernote. And tell me quickly, juicing, like what does that do for you?
Yeah, so juicing for us, when I say us, I mean myself and my wife and actually now our two kids – it was kind of an accident. It was a happy accident where, you know, we realized like our son, my son Finn, he is 3 years old and he has some pretty bad food allergies. He's allergic to dairy, peanuts, and eggs. So I mean, that's quite a bit of food right there off the bat that he's sensitive towards. So because of that, long story short, we had to start watching what he was eating very closely and kind of by accident, we started watching what we were eating and realized that it wasn't the best. So got into juicing through a movie called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, which I highly recommend. It's on Netflix. It's on, I don't know if it's on Hulu or not, but you can watch it. I think you may even be able to watch it online. It might be on YouTube as well. But it tells a story about this guy who is like, he wasn't just a normal looking guy, but he was having a lot of health problems. So he said, I'm going to do a 60-day juicing fast where all he did was drink juices, fruit and vegetable juices. And it tells the story of how he not only, you know, obviously lost weight, but his mental his entire like productivity levels changed. He was able to focus for longer periods of time. His kind of mental cognitive abilities changed. And it shows the story actually of him, this guy Joe, and then another guy, I can't remember his name, but this other guy's from Iowa. Like, so it has a special place in my heart because I'm from Des Moines. But this story just was really inspiring. And so we kind of looked into juicing and have been going strong for about 6 months now. And the changes, I mean, I hesitate to share the story, but I'm going to. Those are always the best kind of stories anyway.
Bring it.
When I had two, and this is going to sound strange, but I had two grown men stop me at separate times, one in the grocery store and one at the gym. One at the gym and remark on my glowing skin. Like I said, I hesitate to share that for obvious reasons. But, you know, it reflected how the changes that we are feeling on the inside, you know, your skin is the largest organ in your body and blah, blah, blah. But it began to change, you know, not only our health, but just our energy levels and my ability to focus. You know, it was just improving rapidly through juicing of all things.
Yeah.
So we love it. It's great.
I am right now, as we record this, almost through day 3 of my 3-day juice fast.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is doing amazing things. Like I've lost weight. I've lost almost 10 pounds.
Out of way.
I know, right? And on top of that, like my brain is just firing. Like I haven't had coffee. I haven't needed it.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
You're a better man than I because I still have to do coffee.
Yeah. Well, I've had a couple sips in the afternoons, but first thing in the morning, like I just hadn't needed it for some reason. So, yeah, just the physicality of it. Like I feel like just my brain is firing and working so much better now. So I'm not going to continue. I mean, I'm not going to do a 60-day juice fast. That's just not going to happen.
That's pretty severe.
Yeah, but I would do 3 days, you know, every once a month for the next months to just get down to where I'm like optimal, you know? That makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah.
So speaking of brain chemistry, let's go talk about your ADHD stuff because I know that is something else where we kind of have a connection is just being diagnosed with that. You were younger. I was an adult And we've dealt with that kind of in similar ways. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, back in the day, they didn't have the H in there, so it was just ADD, and then they've since turned it into ADHD. But regardless, we all know what I'm talking about. But when I was in grade school, would spend a lot of time just in I was just in trouble all the time. I couldn't stay in my seat and would like to just really talk to a lot of people. And now, having looked back on it and having a son myself, I'm realizing that, you know, that's just how some little kids are. Yeah. That's how they work. But, you know, of course, our education system, and we could probably do a whole other show on the education system of in our country, but I just wasn't fitting well. And so went through a series of different tests and talked to a bunch of, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists and these sorts of people. And it was determined, well, hey, Justin's got ADD. He's got some problems there in terms of focusing. Now, that much I do believe is true. And so we went through some different methods, you know, some of which were medicine, some were behavioral methods. So elementary, we found the problems. And then I got to junior high and pretty much it all stopped almost immediately for one reason. And that one reason was we had timed class periods for 50 minutes. Then we had a 10-minute break to get to our next class. And then the next class started. And you would repeat this process throughout the whole day. And I gelled really well with that kind of behavioral modification of working for a short, focused amount of time and then taking a break. Working for a short, focused amount of time and then taking a break. And it turns out, you know, there's a name for this, the Pomodoro method, which I'm sure you're familiar with. That has just done wonders for me. And long story short, it's kind of put constraints on the time that I have to focus. So I know, okay, I may not be the best at focusing, but I can focus on anything. And Pomodoro uses 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off. I can focus on anything for 25 minutes. And then I was watching the Olympics, 2012 Olympics, of course, Michael Phelps, the swimmer, he's kind of another famous ADHD guy. I don't know what you call him. And his mom was telling the story about why Michael was so good at swimming and why he enjoyed swimming so much. Well, what's at the bottom of most competitive swimming pools? Lines. And she told the story of, you know, Michael loved swimming because it put constraints on where he was to go. Like, he could look down at the bottom of the pool and see these lines and know, hey, I have the short amount of space in the world to focus on. And, you know, the results, I think all of us can see that, you know, he's done pretty well in swimming, I'd say. Now, some of that is just because he's super talented at swimming, but I really resonated with that because, you know, in my perspective, it said, I understand what it means to have constraints on your focus and then being able to really do a lot of cool stuff in the short amount of time that you focus.
Yeah. Similar to me is I would find myself doing, when I was diagnosed, I was 20 something, late 20s, mid late 20s. And it was a way different world. So suddenly a lot of stuff from when I was younger made sense. Of course, again, part of it was I was just a boy and a kid. So, you know, chalk that up to that. But suddenly the productivity stuff from getting things done and Merlin Mann and people, suddenly it was like, this stuff all makes sense and really helps me know how to cope and have a structure and a system to which I can work within. And so that's the way that, you know, worked for me.
And I actually think that guys and gals who struggle with this, and most often it's guys, typically, you know, if I don't know what the exact percentages are, but it definitely favors males getting diagnosed with this sort of thing. We have such a capacity typically to, generally speaking, we like to do a lot of different things at the same time. We get bored very easily.
Yeah.
And so having, you know, lots of projects going on lends itself to just being so distracted that you can't focus. But if you are able to really rein that in and say, I can still do all these other things, but, you know, today I'm going to give 2 time blocks to this project and 3 time blocks to this project and 1 time block to this project. That's going to do really well for someone with ADHD to say, I can do all this stuff, but I just need to figure out a way to do them consistently and in a structured manner.
Yeah. And then that way you're feeling like you're pushing things forward and making progress.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. What about when maybe you have a stumble in your productivity?
You mean like what just happened by about half an hour before we started talking? You mean
yeah.
like that? You know, that's one of those things where it's really easy to get down on yourself. At least for me anyway, it's like there have been many days where kind of the strategy unravels and you just chuck it and, you know, surf on Twitter the rest of the day or, you know, play Candy Crush Saga or Words with Friends or something and say, well, the whole day's ruined anyway, so might as well chuck it all. But I have found when you played old school Nintendo and you had to do the reset.
Right, and blow and in blow, it.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Or do like the rapid push up and down.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what I'll do now is to basically say if I find myself trailing off or getting distracted, I'll rein myself back in and essentially say, okay, for the next 10 minutes or whatever, we're going to really indulge in this distraction. And I literally set a timer, the Pomodoro app on my computer. I literally set it for 10 minutes, label it distraction time. And when that timer is up, it's like, okay, you've indulged yourself. Now it's time to get back into the stream. And generally speaking, I mean, I can pretty much pick it right back off where I left off. And I don't know what you're like, but I do get pretty discouraged if I find myself kind of going down that route of just goofing off.
Oh, yeah. I'm yeah. right there with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not ever that you intended to start that way. It's that yeah. you trailed down rabbit hole after rabbit hole when you were actually doing something that probably was worthwhile to start with.
Yep.
Yeah.
And got out of control or something.
Yeah. The show's called Beyond the To-Do List. What about post-it notes?
It's a shame because I really enjoyed this method and it worked better when I was working for the company I was at prior. Now I've started a few different companies and so things are kind of a mess. But anyway, all that to say, when I was working more in a kind of single unified manner, what I would do is basically say, and I don't remember exactly where I heard this, but it worked, and it may have been Lifehacker, actually, and I'm sure they picked it up from somebody. But anyway, the method is basically take a post-it note, and you write 3-4 things on there that you want to get done in the day. And anything beyond that, I mean, realistically, if they're worth investing in, anything beyond 3 or 4 things on a post-it note, you're not going to get it done, so don't write it down. Now, you can have a list of things that you want to keep track of in terms of, you know, ongoing projects and those sorts of things. But in terms of what you're actually able to accomplish in a day, you know, the method is basically anything you can't put on a post-it note, you're not going to finish in the day. So I would use that consistently. And in fact, I actually bought on Amazon one of those old, you know, at the restaurants where they would stab the ticket.
Oh, yeah.
I bought one of those. And when I'd finish a day and cross off my 3 or 4 items, I'd punch it on the spindle. So I just had this sense of kind of like completion and accomplishment, and it worked great.
That's great. That's a really good kind of a tangible way to see that you've done the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. I could walk away at the end of the day and say, I did that. And actually, I mean, when I was in grade school, one of the methods that worked for me was something similar where I would have stickers on my desk, and every time I completed a task, I would get this almost sounds like a, I don't know if it's torture, but it just sounds like mean now. But every time I would complete a task, the teacher would give me a sticker. And if I had enough stickers at the end of the day, then I forgot what happened, but it was essentially, I didn't get in trouble.
Yes.
So anyway, it kind of had echoes back to that, which actually did work. So I found it to be really helpful.
Yeah, it's just we got to find the positive reinforcement when we do the right things any way we can.
Right.
And that's really what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You deal a lot with your show, Think Digital, with digital work. And one of the things you talk about is email. Do you have any kind of – and I know you and I actually went back and forth a little bit on Twitter about the whole Inbox Zero thing recently.
Yeah.
And there was some article that came out that said, you know, it basically went through and said, hey, don't do Inbox Zero. Do it this way. And
yeah.
I was like, that is what Inbox Zero is. I just talked to the guy who invented it. And
yeah.
It's not what most people think it is. And anyway, but regardless, it's still nice to have zero things in your email inbox.
Yes.
Do you have a workflow for that you're using?
I have, like, I think I've tried every method in the book. And that is not a joke. I mean, I think I've tried labels, I've tried, you know, GTD, you name it, and I've attempted to do it. And the system that I have found to be worthwhile that I'm investing in right now, there's a couple different tools. One is just the labeling system in Gmail right now. Is if I didn't have that, I don't know what I'd do, because that helps me to get to inbox zero. And like you were saying, the article about Inc. was saying, I think it was from Inc. I think it was Inc.com, but
yes,
they were saying,
yeah, it was.
I mean, they were describing, like you said, they were describing inbox zero, but they were labeling it a little bit differently. So I think it's like, I think it was helpful for people who felt like they knew what inbox zero was. I find that if everything's labeled, right, which essentially is what inbox zero is,
right,
is purposefully identifying and tagging every piece of mail that comes into your inbox. And you can do that a number of, or at least in my method, you can do that a number of different ways. And the way that I do it is I use a service called, is it Sane Later? I think it's Sane Later. It's Sane something, Sane Box. That's what it is.
Oh, cool.
Sanebox.com, SaneBox.com. And it will, you have to grant it permission to look into your inbox. And it's GML dependent, by the way. And so it filters automatically emails coming in. And there are filters that you can do this through Gmail, but this is a little more comprehensive. And it just kind of filters things, and it's like a really smart way to manage your inbox. So that's been helpful to me. Also, making sure that when I leave at the end of the day, and I will sometimes stay up until 11, 12 at night, which is late for me because I have two small kids, ensuring that every piece of mail is identified somehow. Even if it's to say, listen, I didn't get to 50 items in my inbox today, but I'm going to move those to a label that I have called a follow-up so that I know when I start tomorrow, this is where I need to start. That for me has worked really well. I also have a virtual assistant who helps with the load a little bit, because now it's getting to a point where even the systems that I do have in place are kind of, they're not failing. They're just, it's not enough to keep
right.
up.
Yeah.
And now the emails that are coming in, there's leads and there's people who need support with some of the services that we're offering. And so I have to really stay on top of it because of that. But I wish there was like a one size fits all, but you know, I think it's for people, the inbox zero method. By the way, I encourage everyone, if they haven't, to listen to that episode of your podcast. Because, I mean, that for me was truly helpful to just hear it from the perspective of the creator. And I'm blanking on his name now.
Merlin Mann.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that to me is essentially the only way that I can see for people who deal with a lot of high volume email to keep up. I mean, truly, that's the only one that I've found that actually works.
Yeah.
What do you use? I mean, I'm sure you're a fan of Inbox Zero, but yep. How do you make it happen?
Yeah, well, I dedicate certain chunks of time throughout the day that are the exact moment where I'm going to go look to see what's in there. Hopefully, there's nothing already in there by the time I get there, and that I'm just looking at new stuff that's come in since the last time I checked, in an ideal world. Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, let me remind you to ask the question about the how you start your morning in a second.
Yeah.
Because I forget sometimes, and because we just get talking. So I use Gmail. I have filters set up automatically for certain things where they go into a folder and never touch the inbox ever. And yeah. I know, all right, I need to go look in that folder and do this, this, and this, and then I'm done. I unsubscribe from most newsletters that I can. There are few newsletters like yours that I make sure I have come into all into one folder, and I check those once a day and just go through them real quick. And let's see, what else do I do? Declare bankruptcy. At one point I did. Yeah, I mean, you just have to. At some point I think you just have to. And you don't have to – maybe you can't let yourself have permission to do the entire inbox that way. Fine. Go through and delete everything that you can right now, first pass. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And that's usually how I start, actually, when I go in anyways. Like, oh, junk, 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 junk. Oh, that I've gotten a lot of junk lately. Delete and unsubscribe or report for spam, whatever it is. And, you know, so that's kind of how I'm handling it at this point.
It's a challenge, man. I think honestly, that's probably the hardest thing for me to rein in.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, somebody's got to figure it out eventually, right?
Right. Yeah. It's one of those things. I think it is even more than social media in some ways. I think email has become one of the biggest productivity pitfalls.
Yeah.
I'd love to end. Nope, let's not end. I got to ask you that question. We already know that you drink juice probably first thing in the morning with your family, correct?
Yep.
And so that's part of it. But how in an ideal world do you start your day?
So I'll answer this quickly in two parts. One, the way that I used to do it. And two, the way that I do it now. The way that I used to do it was would go to bed around 9:30 or 10 on a good day. And then I'd wake up around, you know, my wife goes to work out at 4:45. She is as dedicated a person as I know in that area. So typically I'd get up just a little bit after that because I think to myself, if she can go and sweat it out, this mother of two who's just amazing, I can get up and start, you know, pouring the coffee or whatever. So I'd get up shortly after that, go downstairs and really spend hour and a half just workings. And typically for me, I put all my creative stuff in the morning. So if I have to create content or material or strategy reports, these types of things, I'll put that in the morning because that's when I find I'm most sharp and alert. So it's not unlike some of the other folks you've had on the podcast. And I know Craig Jarrow from Time Management Ninja.
Yeah.
Same type of thing where I get up and I'm able to put in a good hour and a half of work before my family gets up. Now that has changed recently. So anyway, you work, family comes down, and usually from about 7 to 9, I'll spend with them just hanging out, eating breakfast, playing with the kids and that sort of thing, and then get the day started around 9. Now recently, I have switched that where I will stay up now until my wife goes to bed around 9:30 or 10, and I will stay up from about 10 to 12, maybe 12:30, and do that work that I did in the morning at night, and then sleep until about 7 when the kids get up, and then start the routine at 9. And I made that change because my daughter is going through this weird phase right now where she gets up at like, it's ridiculous. It's like, it's illegal how early she gets up. So, you know, I have to we have to put her back down or nurse her or whatever. And so getting that focused a couple of hours in the morning isn't possible right now. So I've just tacked it on the last end of the night and it's worked really well and I may stick with it, but that's typically what a day looks like, at least getting started anyway.
That's awesome. That's a great example of adapting your schedule when you really have a priority need to have to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important part is just finding that uninterrupted block to do the things that matter.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to do, and I think I'm going to change this now, is one of the things that you've done with your show is talk about all the digital, how you can do digital the right way, digital marketing, digital content, strategy, all that kind of stuff. And one of the first few shows you did was on 5 email mistakes you're probably making and don't even realize. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tease that and say, and give the link in the show notes, people need to go listen to that.
Snap.
Because it's good. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That was a fun episode, and it really came from, honestly, most of that is stuff that I have totally flubbed up myself in building my own list and sending out emails. And it's like, man, if someone could have told me to not do these things, this would have been hugely helpful for me. So I have no problems in people profiting off my mistakes.
Yeah. So consider this that kind of unless you hate this kind of thing, but consider this that version of, hey, sign up for the email list and get this free ebook thing. You've listened to this podcast long enough and Justin's, you know, been gracious enough to answer awesome productivity questions. Go check out his show and definitely check out the one with Gary Vaynerchuk and Jeff Goins and the 5 email mistakes you're probably making and don't even realize.
Yes, that would be awesome. I would love to have your folks check that out.
If you need other credibility to note, I was looking this up a second ago. Yeah, your podcast has all 4 and 5-star reviews, and you've got like 71 total, you're off to an awesome start.
Yeah, man, it has. I gotta tell you, it has been a complete surprise. Just kind of started this on a whim, and I've just been really encouraged by the response. And not only that, I mean, certainly, totally appreciate the listeners, but the community that of podcasters has just been so welcoming. People like you, people like Cliff Ravenscraft, Podcast Answer Man, of course, people like Pat Flynn, Michael Hyatt, all these guys have just been incredibly gracious with their time, their expertise. I mean, that's a community that I want to be part of, and I know that my listeners, and it sounds strange to say that, but my listeners really enjoy that community as well. So, and it's just been a blast, and special thanks to you for having me on, and I hope that some of your listeners will check out what we're doing over at Think Digital.
Yeah, I will make sure to leave all the links to everything that you've got in the show notes. And Justin, thanks for coming by. It's been awesome to talk with you.
You bet, Eric. My pleasure.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Again, make sure to check out Justin's site over at justinwise.net, where you can check out his speaking and his blog, as well as his podcast, Think Digital, that starts with a pound sign or the hashtag. And you'll find the show notes and links to all the things we covered at beyondthetodolist.com/37. Again, if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to check out all the other episodes by going to beyondthetodolist.com or find us in iTunes at beyondthetodolist.com/iTunes. That's also where you can leave us a 5-star review if you're enjoying and learning from the show, and leave us any feedback you'd like to do. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next episode.